Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Here we are recording. I'm with my co-host, Burl Love, and today's the day I didn't oversleep because yesterday was the day after Election Day, and my boss, Carl, was like, "Where are you? Where are you?" I accidentally slept till 10, but I was up very late. We're going to talk about the election. I do want to say our special guest is there was plenty of people that could talk about the election, but I spy something fun on Fountain Square.
What did you spy?
It's the Christmas
with your little eye.
It's the Christmas tree. I saw it the other day. I love Christmas. You were talking about, you know, how does this all work and everything. And so we tracked down Christy Samad. She's the vice president of Events Corp, senior vice president. You guys, this is a huge job. She works for 3CDC, and she's in charge of all the events and programmings for 3CDC. It's a development company, but they activate so many of their spaces. This is very important to our downtown. It's like the forgotten part of what they do. And so I was like, let's have her on, and she can tell us about, you know, kind of all the Christmas things that are coming. But I want to know about this Christmas tree.
Right. This is one of the big things she has to make sure happen, getting that tree here.
Could you even imagine like the responsibility of that? Like,
well, I have questions. I'm sure you do too. But we should probably talk a little bit about why you were up so late Tuesday night.
So a lot of election things to talk about, but I personally covered, so Scott Wortman is the political reporter. I don't want to say I covered anything because poor Scott has been just worked to the bone, really covered these races as all along. But on election night, I went to Councilman Greg Landsman's party. He was running for the first congressional district against Steve Chabot. And this was, you know, a very competitive race. It was overshadowed a lot by the J.D. Vance Tim Ryan race, where there was actually like polls and everything and the national eye on that race. But this race was very important to our area. Steve Chabot is this longtime congressman. You know, only once in 2008, Steve Driehaus, you know, slipped in there. Then Chabot came right back in 2 years and he took that seat back. And it was like, can Greg Landsman do it? And that was really the question of the night.
And it was a big question because the district was redrawn.
Favorable to Democrats.
Even though it is being challenged and the district boundaries might change again once the lawsuits and everything are over. For those who haven't been following the redistricting saga,
which is nobody but us, you guys read the stories, I know, but it's very hard to keep up with.
But essentially, you have, for the first time in a while, the entire city of Cincinnati in District 1. And the concession to the Republicans was to throw in a chunk of Warren County. So with different district boundaries, it was really one of those, well, we're going to have to wait and see how some of these areas end up voting
because you already had some Warren County.
Right.
The big difference was they took away Green.
Yes, they took away some reliable.
Definitely. They were just going to push Chabot over.
Right.
But, you know, I live in the district. I do think that helps when you're trying to handicap a race, just because you get a feeling
sure.
of things. What did you see before?
Okay, so you're going to brag now because you predicted this.
Oh, yeah, I totally
right?
am.
Right. And my prediction didn't turn out at all, so I owe Jason Williams lunch. Let's just get this out of the way. I thought Smitherman had a chance as a
I love that you thought that, because you were basing it on who Christopher Smitherman is as a person.
You know, I was also basing it on he was just campaigning. He was out there, you know. And until the end, I didn't see a lot. I mean, the Republican didn't campaign at all. He was invisible. You didn't even remember his name.
I know it now.
Yeah. Stephanie Dumas really didn't put a big effort into the campaign until I think the end. And so I just kind of watching how Smitherman works. He's got name recognition. He had some key endorsements that were a little bit surprising to me. And so I thought, you know, I predicted it because I always like to find a dark horse upset, you know, Cinderella candidate and say, okay, I'm going to go with that. And it didn't happen. In fact, he was last. He didn't even, yeah.
He was. You know what?
So I owe Jason Williams lunch.
he made a decision. And he made a very calculated, he knows those sample ballots are everything. People, they don't, especially because, okay, you might know who you're voting for governor, but then you're like, huh, who else am I voting for? What's on this thing? And people take those sample ballots. And when you have an eye, you're the independent, there's no sample ballot. He knew it. He knew going in that this was going to be an uphill battle because people just rely on those sample ballots. So,
well, and that's what happened. But back to the Shabbat-Landsman race.
Frank Landsman's going to Congress.
I know. That's a big story. It's the first time in a long time we haven't had Steve Shabbat representing the district.
And Steve broke major news with Scott yesterday is that he's not going to run again. And I realize that he maybe is of retirement age and everything, so it's not like you're, on one hand, you're like, well, that's not major. He's ready to retire. But on the other hand, he's always been the congressperson. And so you're like, wow.
So I was eager to see how the new parts, not new parts, but the parts that were in District 1 that weren't before affected the race. And I think that's where the – that's how the race was won, if you ask me. Because – so I live in Blue Ash, and I've – been there going on 5 years now. This is the first time I've had Steve Shabbat on my ballot. I was represented by Brad Wenstrup. And so you have that kind of pocket of Hamilton County, new in the district, you know, Blue Ash, Montgomery, Madeira, I believe. And I think that's where we saw, I think that's where it was kind of a wait and see to see how much of that would go blue or how much of that would go red. And it went pretty blue.
It went blue. And also, Greg garnered more of Warren County than people thought that he was going to. And then those early votes were coming in. That's when eyebrows really started to be like, is he really going to pull this off?
And right. He did perform well there. Because some people were expecting a blowout for Shabbat, and then he just needed to get enough of Hamilton County. You know, you can cross off the city of Cincinnati. Most of those precincts are reliably Democratic. But the Hamilton County suburbs are still a little purple. You know, there's some parts of town you drive through and you see either all Republican signs or all Democratic signs. It's pretty split in that kind of, you know, first-tier east side suburbs. I think there's, you know, the demographics play well towards Democrats in some cases. And I think you've got a lot of, not to sound stereotypical, but the kind of the suburban housewife factor, highly educated and motivated to turn out perhaps because of, you know,
Roe v. Wade. We saw new voters. And all along, like we didn't see, you know, tons and tons of them, but we saw new voters. But my thing was this whole time, anybody who was going out to register to vote, like who was a woman in suburbia, that is why they were doing it. They didn't say to themselves suddenly, I think I should vote this year because I love Mike DeWine or I love Nan Whaley or I love Greg Landsman or I love Steve Shabbat. Those people were not there. New voters weren't saying, it's time for me to vote. Because they had an issue in their head and they said, it's time for me to vote.
Well, and speaking of the issues, I think, you know, the Monday morning quarterback in me wants to look at the Shabbat campaign and say, okay, he was hitting Landsman hard on police funding.
You don't say.
And that was not the issue people cared about this time around. It was like the pocketbook, the checkbook. It was the economy, stupid.
The thing I learned that I knew, okay, so if you're going to hit on crime, I think when they were kind of planning that and doing focus groups about what was going to work, you know, there was a higher homicide, you know, number. There were higher shootings. And that ebbs and flows. And right now, thank God, we're in a down space of it. And I think that's going to bode well for the rest of the year. And so I'm not thinking to myself, it's dangerous, it's scary. There were times earlier this year where I was really surprised at how I felt about crime because I'm never scared of anything. Like I've been to all the different places and I know that usually it's personal and you don't have to worry. You can come downtown, you are safe. And I just had this tepid feeling every once in a while early this year, but not now. And so people that was not a resonant. You were totally right. It's not an issue that didn't resonate.
And it was also kind of disingenuous on part of the Shabba campaign because it was.
And Greg didn't defund the police.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, you can go through his voting record and, you know, without fail, every budget he voted for incrementally increased law enforcement funding. So it just was a, you know, it's politics, and sometimes politics is played dirty. And
I promise you, if Greg Lantzman,
that combination, I think, was not it didn't shift the vote that Shabbat needed to win.
If Greg Lantzman defunded the police, I would have written that story, and my stories, as they usually are, would have been in those ads. Instead, they had to dig deep for some other stuff about that because I was right. Like, that's not true. Right. And I never wrote it.
That's exactly right. I will give Steve Shabbat credit because so we're sitting in the newsroom. We're watching the numbers come in. I think there was still 20% of the vote out. It looked like it was going to go Lansman's way. No one had called the race yet. And we, you know, we're very, very cautious. We don't call the race prematurely. But we heard from you that Shabbat had called Greg Lantzman to concede. And that's what, you know, when we're looking for like, okay, when do we change the headline from Lantzman has a lead to Lantzman wins? That was the deciding factor. And I give Steve Shabbat a lot of credit because that was very statesmanlike. Where, you know, I think a lot of people are concerned about, you know, after the 2020 election, are we hitting this era of politics where people aren't going to concede and they're going to challenge election results and fuel the anxiety over election integrity and all of that. Remember, Shabbat did not vote to certify the presidential election.
Yes, I remember.
Yes.
It came up in every debate.
I was actually surprised that he early and cordially called to concede and congratulate Lantzman for the win. I thought that was classy and needed, quite frankly. I hope that that's an example for others to follow.
Not only that, I heard that he was such a gentleman that he offered, what do you need? Do you want to go to lunch? Let me help you. And like, that is very statesmanlike to say, you know, you're going to be new, right? Like, what do you need to understand what's happening? There'll be other Democrats there that will be happy to help. But Steve understands the district and what's needed there.
Oh, absolutely. So I was impressed with that.
Yes,
agree. I thought that was, and like I said, I hope others follow that example on both sides of the aisle.
My favorite moment, though, I just thought that this was amazing. Joe Biden called Greg.
Oh,
hold for the president, and here's his. Greg's party was insane. People were crying, hugging. Like you see cheers and everything, but this was very emotional. A lot of people put a lot of work into it.
Right.
And he had to be pulled away. The president's on the phone. I did hear that out of the corner of my ear. And I was like, oh my God. And Greg let me outside with him to hear a little bit of that conversation from his end. And so the president did call him. And then later I saw, like, I think on TikTok, that the president, all from his side, had called all of these candidates
right.
that flipped a district.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's Joe Biden, you know, congratulations. And it was fun to see the other side.
Right. So I'm glad we spent some time talking about that race. A few of the others, you know, no surprise that DeWine turns out one of the most lopsided gubernatorial elections we've had in the state ever. I think it's like in the top three. According to what we reported. So not a big surprise there, though, because, I mean, Mike DeWine, he's paid his dues.
He was on TV every day COVID.
He was not only a fixture on our TVs through the COVID crisis, he was gotten national recognition for how he handled the Ohio's response to the pandemic. And, you know, he had his critics towards the end, especially from his own party, but he weathered that. I think it was a little surprising he won by so much, but not a surprise that he won. The other one that went down to the wire, Vance Ryan, not a big surprise, though. that Vance won Ohio if you look at how the state tends to vote when it comes to national candidates.
Tim Ryan ran a really good campaign. He himself raised a lot of money. Honestly, I just have never understood, and it's not something I have a lot of things to pay attention to at City Hall, but I've not really understood why it wasn't the national race that I thought it should be. With the national, towards the end, I saw a lot of New York Times and Washington Post stories, mm-hmm. but it was not at the beginning, like, this is the race we're flipping. This is like, everyone's coming in and this is the race. And Tim ran it down to the wire. Kind of all by himself.
I think at the end, people were watching, you know, as we still don't know the balance of power, thanks to Nevada, thanks to Georgia.
Oh, a runoff in Georgia. It's deja vu.
And, you know, I used to work in Nevada, and I know these candidates. I know these people. And it's fascinating to see that, you know, you have a state like Florida that, you know, has 20 million votes to count. And they're done. And you got Nevada with 6 million, I'm guessing.
They don't start counting till like the end or like later. All these different rules for these different states.
Right.
It's crazy.
So
you have to keep track of it. Like.
So, yeah. So the nation still awaits a final tally on the balance of power. It looks like, you know, the House will safely return to the Republicans. But the Senate, that's a tough one. That is a tough one. So, yeah, it would be weird if Ohio had two Democratic senators or two Republican senators. I kind of like that the Senate is equally represented. And next up, Sherrod Brown's going to have to defend his seat. So we're going
to
do it all again.
See what he does.
We're going to do it all again. All right. Well,
We're really going to do it all again on the city side. They're going to pick a seat for Greg. We'll talk about that next week, you guys.
Let's do that.
It's the beginning of things, of picking a seat. But next year's the council election. I literally was like towards the end of the night, and I was like, "Oh, this year was this year was my off year."
Right. Everybody talks about the year after the midterms being the off year, and everybody kind of looking ahead to the presidential election. Not an off year for Sherry Coolidge.
No, we're going to learn a lot about these council people. It's the first time that we're really the 2 year. Like, okay, we switched to 2 year, and it's always for a long time it's been the mayor year, mm-hmm. and there's just so much that the mayor. But you know, it's going to give us some air to breathe with just a 2 year term. It's just going to be about the council members.
And we can talk more about that, but we should talk about whether that 2 year term is good or bad.
Yeah.
Because it just seems like they can't really get down to work until they have to worry about campaigning.
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts. Okay.
All right. Well, but let's shift gears.
Yes. Let's talk about Christmas.
We got a Christmas tree on Fountain Square. We need to find out how it got there, how big is it, and anything else that people might want to know.
Let's do it. Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. We already talked a little bit about 3CDC, but I'm sitting here now with Christy Samad, Vice President of Events. And there's so many events for 3CDC. We're going to focus on just a couple of them today, I think, but who knows how far we'll get into them. So we're also going to call her Mrs. Claus because the Christmas tree is up at Fountain Square. Yay!
Oh, yeah. Super exciting.
Did you put that up by yourself with your
husband? Oh, yeah,
have your husband help you, the two of you?
It's one of those honey-do lists.
So how does it actually work?
Sure. So, I mean, this process is a little crazy. I mean, it's a year-round process. It is like, the North Pole where we're working all year round. And it's actually, there's 9 companies that work together to put this thing up on the day of. But one in particular, Zooks, they help us. We hire them to look for the perfect Christmas tree all year round. And they look all year. So
and who's that again?
It's Zooks.
Zooks.
Yeah. And it's we've used them since the beginning in 2007.
What is their specialty? Like looking for Christmas trees?
It's a tree service, but yeah. So, because they're looking at trees all year round, they can look at the beautiful ones to contend for the holiday tree.
Do you give
them
a like spec sheet? Like it can't be shorter than this?
Okay. And and that is a very good note because we do through our website and a lot of people reach out to council and saying they have the best tree in their front yard. But knowing that it's typically 45 feet and higher, it definitely has some requirements that we look for. And so not your average Joe tree can be selected. But so Zooks, the company, looks all year round. And then in September, we, our production team, we have two mostly of the same people who go every year. And so they see the top five contenders and they go. And usually it's in northern Ohio somewhere. And they select the tree.
So there's not like a Tinder app for Christmas trees, you know, where you swipe to.
This could be like
you
the best
actually go and
idea.
Look at it in real life.
Yeah. Oh, we do. We do. We can't be catfished.
It kind of sounds more fish, like a beauty know. Contest where yes. they have sashes and who's going to be runner up. And yeah. like.
No, it doesn't sound like a beauty contest at all, Sherry.
It's definitely the people have their like very particular about the tree. Obviously, we saw that in 2020 when.
All right, let's.
Well, since
had,
you brought it up,
I know. I mean,
but I mean, now
I
you got to embrace it, right? So, I mean, for those who don't remember, and I'll just kind of describe it from the not the insider perspective, sure. but just like hanging out on social media one day, and of course, our job requires us to monitor at all times. You know what the community conversation is, what the buzz is, and. There was a I don't even know what you want to call it, this just like community OMG moment outrage. Because it was sort of like a Charlie Brown Christmas tree at 45 feet tall.
It was yeah. And it was larger. But the thing that do you want to continue
no,
on your
No, no, no. Okay. And so like that could be a little bit of a PR crisis for the group in charge of you know, putting the tree
Wait,
on Fountain Square.
Oh, yes. Well, and, you know, it takes a lot of time. So you're like, oh, crap. Like, now we got this bad, you know, rap. But what people didn't know is when the picture was taken, it still wasn't all revealed. It wasn't zhuzhed. It wasn't, you know, half of the top of the tree was still bandaged up.
And I hope that all the haters on social media had that moment that we all have at the end of watching a Charlie Brown Christmas where all the kids are hating on Charlie Brown. And then they come and they wave their hands around, and all of a sudden it's like a beautiful tree. Is that what happened?
Oh, yeah. Do you know that we actually incorporated that bit into our programming on the rink? I mean, we had to.
So you guys are so good at like just rolling with it and turning a negative into a positive. And
It was 2020. We had to. That was like the theme of the year.
It was such the perfect tree for 2020.
So we've had Steve Leeper on the podcast before. He's been a guest. What was his reaction? Was he like tepid and is, well, don't worry, I know we'll get it fixed? Or was he like on fire? Like,
well, so anyway.
moving
right along. No, he was actually really pretty even keeled. And to be honest with you, this became like, to your point, yes, it was potentially in the beginning bad PR. But we had Inside Edition calling us like, you know, let's do an interview about this tree.
Oh,
and then
internet.
I don't know if you remember, but Rockefeller Center had the same thing. And we're like, so Inside Edition called us and was like, I think Rockefeller Center is trying to copy you guys because they saw all of the PR that you got. And so it became this thing. And,
it was
and then,
brilliant.
I don't know if you remember, but then that later that year, Rockefeller, there was like an owl that came out of it. And we're like, we need to call the zoo and get a bald eagle to come out of ours. And so it was like this one-upper thing. But people have opinions.
I would put it in my top 10 list of best PR moments in Cincinnati.
Yes. Well, we're talking about it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When people are still comparing it. I just saw
So we'll have to make sure on the article we post for this podcast that we drop in those photos so people can see if they don't remember, if they weren't here. Because it truly was a remarkable turnaround from before and after. And I think it was more than zhuzhing. I think it was like twine and extra branches. Like
look, she has a lot of secrets.
Like the hair, the equivalent of hair extensions for Christmas trees. You know, was there some of that going on,
oh, there,
too?
Oh, there definitely is.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as
the perfect postcard tree at that size and
however,
shipping it. And
great segue to this year because I do feel like – and we've always gone with the Norway spruce. And this year we went with the Concolor fir. And it is beautiful in how the branches
hang. All the Norwegians
hang.
Are upset now.
I'm not, you know, hating against anyone, but I'm just saying it's very full. There is no additional branches put into this year.
Because they're much fuller and they have the longer needles, right?
Yes. And instead of going downward, they rise towards the sky. So it's like less drooping.
So it's a big, fat tree.
Okay. I still have more questions about the tree.
Yeah.
The 2020 tree?
No, this one.
Oh, okay. But so I was just hypothesizing that you add branches and fill in gaps and stuff. But that's really what happens.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The extensions. I mean, you were right on.
Because it's not like, so we do a live tree. And, you know, there's always that one side of the tree that you, like, turn around towards the wall, or you put extra decorations in.
We don't have one.
But, yeah, you're, like, 360. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can put,
it's
you
true.
Know.
There's no hiding.
Yeah, there's no hiding.
If we ever see it, like, against the wall at Fifth Third, we'll know it was a really bad year.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Does it cost money?
It does. It does. And so we can't do it without sponsors. And this year, ProLink Staffing Agency, they are our title sponsor. So you'll notice there's an actually new beautiful star on top of the tree as well.
Not the Macy's star?
It's not.
Set in the basement? I'm in a mood today. I'm sorry.
It's in this is fun. It's in one of those like crates that you buy at Target. You know, the red and green
are
crate.
You going to return it to Macy's?
No.
Okay.
No.
But you still have it?
We still have it.
That's a good that'll be a good community archive.
Maybe it should go to the sign museum.
It could.
Oh, that is a great
idea. Or you guys could auction it off or something.
I do remember it. Like, I mean, oh, it's taking it was beautiful. Jack as a little boy. Like, there's a lot of memories there.
Yeah.
However, if you get invited to the Steve Leeper Christmas party, it'll be on his tree at home.
Is that a real thing?
I'm kidding.
I haven't been invited yet.
Oh, my nice tree.
Have to take that.
Hey, Steve, that looks like the Macy's star on your tree. No.
But the cool thing about this star, though, it we got a local iron worker, or steel worker, and he built it in the past month, and it's three-dimensional. It's beautiful. It's Iron Bell steel worker is – Jordan, he's great. He was awesome to work with. I'd highly recommend. But it's beautiful. And so it is lit within, and that will debut on ProLink's Light Up the Square.
On Wednesday night.
It's Friday.
Friday night.
Yep,
yeah,
Black
after
Friday.
Thanksgiving. Yes.
And that's when the tree will be lit in all of its glory.
Does somebody have to, like, water it and, like, take care of it all the time?
So we have parks. They, you know, they
the
are.
Parks.
Yeah.
Aww.
They do all of the plantings around Fountain Square. And so they tend to the tree as well. Another fun fact, there's 7,000 linear feet of lights on this tree, which is a lot of lights.
Is that more than usual?
It's – in the past 2 years, we've upped our game, so.
I feel like everyone is upping their game. Like, yeah. It's like the light shows this year.
I know. Well, and so speaking of light shows, so we work with Vincent, and in the past, and this actually came out of 2020 as well, because we weren't able to do all of the events, like, you know, the traditional light up and dazzles. And so we did light shows every night. And so Vincent Lighting came to us, and we worked on a light show at the ice rink that includes the tree. So it dances. And this is where the Charlie Brown, like, we had the soundtrack part of that.
Aww.
Because everyone, it was such a sad tree. And then it lit up and danced at the end of the show.
That's amazing.
Yes.
7,000 linear feet.
Yes.
It's not 7,000 lights, 7,000
linear feet.
That's a lot. That's like Clark Griswold
territory.
What if
one of them goes out?
Thankfully, it's not.
The whole string goes
out. I know. Thankfully,
it's
not
one
of those
one
where
time.
You're like intertwined in the tree, like, damn it, I need. No.
I'm a huge Christmas person. That's how I know how to ask all these questions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is there the repelling Sienna still?
Yep. So all the really holiday things happen after that Black Friday. So when the tree lights up on November 25th, then that Saturday for the next 4 Saturdays, we'll do the dazzles. And that's where Santa repels from the building right across the street. So, and then we'll do the light shows. Actually, on Saturday nights, we have a light live DJ that will work the lights with the music and everything. So it's definitely a holiday.
Has it just gotten bigger and more, like, every year?
It has. And, well, it's been fun because I feel like, you know, downtown and with the pandemic, we really are seeing, like, pre-pandemic numbers. And it continues to grow. And, I mean, across the street with Foundry opening, I mean, and just having we loved Macy's across the street, but it did close at 5, and now we have tenants that are open until late into the evening, and so that just adds to the vibrancy.
I agree with that. I think it's going to be lovely synergy.
You'll have the smell of wafting cigar smoke coming from the Jeff Ruby cigar
with the
patio.
New Concolor Fair smell of the evergreen. But also, the other events, I mean, you know, Reds Fest is back at the convention center. And so partnering with that and the ice rink, and I hear Chris Kindle Market's coming, the banks. Ooh. And so I think there's a lot of stuff that is happening downtown. And so, you know, working with all of these partners and figuring out how to make downtown multiple destinations to stop at, right? Like creating the itineraries for families where it's not just the ice rink.
You ticked off all these events, it struck me that probably most people don't realize when they think of 3CDC, they think of, oh, that's that, you know, quasi-government private partnership group that develops, they buy real estate, they incentivize developers, they're responsible for developing over the Rhine. But the organization 3CDC has gotten into some other things, such as entertainment programming.
Yeah.
That some might say, well, that's odd. But if you think about it, you are participating in bringing excitement to the area that you're hoping
it's
to develop.
It's their marketing arm, right?
Yeah. It's a very, you know, instead of just communicating about, you know, what the organization is, you are actually creating programming, creating content. Was that talk a little bit about how that evolved and was that always part of the vision, or did the organization see a need and decided, well, if we don't do it, nobody will, so we're going to step in?
Sure. It's definitely grown throughout the years as we've grown. But, you know, when we redid, partnered with the city and renovated the square in the beginning, you know, during that construction project, we're like, a pretty space is only as good as it's used. And so at that point, we then were talking to the city and entered into a management agreement to manage and program the space 365. And at that point, you know, we were just a real estate development company and then, you know, entered and dabbled into the management side. And ever since, I'd love to come back anytime. I just invited myself. Improvement districts as well, and employ all of the clean and safe. We're really as much as a management company. But you're exactly right. We look at it as our marketing arm. The more bodies that are down, the more people who are spending money in the businesses and in their parking, and they want to live downtown. And it just makes downtown thrive in general. And so it's really looking at it holistically in that way.
And the more I think about it, it's not as unusual as you might think, because property owners themselves, whether it's a commercial development with office space and tenants, or it's a residential place, the property management has gotten into programming, having events, having, you know, in our building, there's a tenant patio being constructed that they're going to have, you know, it's just all kinds of, you just can't like, you guys are looking at me like this is a joke, but I'm serious. It's fascinating.
No, I believe you. And you know who has a beautiful space right across from the square? It's like on 4th Street is First Financial Bank.
Oh, yeah.
Their lobby is like a Christmas wonderland in there with like moving,
it's
animated.
It's not enough just to have the space. You have to create the environment. You have to create, you know, give people reasons to come or show up or stay. You know,
and you're right on marketing in general. I mean, people are doing more events rather than just the traditional buy. But then also, I feel like sponsorships, right? It's no longer just logos everywhere. It's like, how can we engage with people who come on site? And, you know, it's really thinking of the experience and how to get people engaged in that, you know, rather than just seeing exposure.
Are you doing anything special with Imagination Alley this year?
We are. We're actually working with Art Academy. And so they have some students that are going to sculpt duct tape sculptures. There's actually going to be 6 stars. 4 of them will be artistically, like the colors will be done and very vibrant. And then 2, they're going to leave plain and white. And so then they're going to leave duct tape. And we're doing some different programs like S'more Night and Tailgate for the Bengals and some different holiday programs that will have duct tape where people in the community can come and decorate their own stars.
And have like fire pits for like s'mores and everything.
Yeah.
I've done that in other cities. It's lovely.
Yeah. And I think that's one silver lining for COVID too. I think people got used to coming out and being cold and braving out. And so we've been toying around. I mean, ice rink aside, since we've done that for so many years, but what other events can we do? And people will hang out outside. And well, I mean, right now it's 74 degrees and our ice rink's open. So that doesn't matter. But, you know, hopefully
okay. The city had like a press conference at the Salt Domes to say we're all ready for winter. It was 72 degrees.
Well, I mean, in typical Cincinnati fashion, it's, what, 70 now? It's going to be 30 this Saturday weekend. Night. I mean, we're going to – the temperature will drop. All the stocking hats and the sweaters that we prematurely got out a few weeks ago.
Right. But the ice rink's already open, right?
It's already open, yeah. It's a little swampy. But we always joke because –
it's a slush rink.
Yeah, it is. It is. We always joke because – so we open our pool at Ziegler Park pretty early. And so the first day that we opened that, it was snowing. And, you know, we always try to push it back and back. And I'm like, the day that we have the ice rink open and the pool open at the same time –
it could, that could happen.
I
can see it.
But.
So is that it? That's your job is like planning fun events?
It is. And I mean, I love it. Born, raised, educated in Cincinnati. So this is, you know, my dream job. But looking at all of the things that, how does it come together? One, you know, 3CDC produces a ton of events, but also looking, there's so many people that are doing their own events, and how can we complement each other, and how can we, you know, promote each other? I mean, like I said, with the Chris Kindle Market at the Banks, we're meeting with them next week to say, hey, if people are going down to the Banks, how can we bring them to the rink? And I mean, it's really just connecting the dots. And I think, you know, everyone says Cincinnati is the 2 degree of Kevin Bacon, and it really is.
So
if you
true.
Want to meet someone, you know, just call them and get. Make it happen.
That's true.
Why
you need to interview
so
somebody. You have a mutual friend with them on Facebook. That's how that works.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And then there'll be a city flea, right? Like
yeah.
an outside one? Or
so
is it inside?
Washington Park. We have it's Al Nyer's Winter Market this year. And every weekend we will feature different vendors. But then on, I believe it's December 17th, 18th, we partner with City Flea. And so we'll do a daytime market, but then they do their special nighttime market. And talk about weather. They always look out. I shouldn't be saying this out loud because I'm going to jinx them.
Going to jinx them. Knock on wood.
I know. But they always, you know, have the good day. But then like Cincinnati or SantaCon happens and then we've got
SantaCon.
Everyone's
I forgot about that. And I did it last year. Weird.
Parents be warned, right? You don't want your kids interacting with all
who put SantaCon together?
So back in the day, it was Bill Donabedian who actually worked at 3CDC and a group of people. And I don't think he's involved anymore. And I should know of the organization. But
he probably sold it to somebody.
Or it just takes a life on its own.
Yes.
I should have known Bill Donabedian was behind it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. It's fun. I mean, they usually, you know, start at Fountain Square. And
marks down, check SantaCon date.
I think it's December 10th, actually.
December 10th?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
All right.
All right, Pearl. We have to do it. It's for research.
But anyway, the winter market, though.
Back to the winter market.
Back to the winter market. So City Flea will be there, but we also partner with Mortar and Art on Vine and the OTR Chamber. And so we try to get different vendors every week. So then if you go one weekend, you can come back. You can continue to come back. And we have winter huts, and it's a great experience. We actually, I don't know if you remember, did Chris Kindle Market at Fountain Square for actually several years. But 2019 was the last because we ran out of room – really for the space, but then COVID happened and social distancing, we couldn't have both there. So glad to see that.
I did it one year when the ballet was at Aronoff. And so it was kind of like a synergy there. That was very fun.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Germantown, we need that German market in the urban core.
I'm excited for all of this.
I know.
I'm going to have to like put together my, you know, don't miss out list, like make, you know, kind of schedule it, do the perfect like... That might be a good idea. If you were to like put together from a tour guide, like somebody's in town for 24 hours, you know, between Thanksgiving and Christmas, what is the like top five things they have to do from your perspective?
That's a great question.
Like I'm going to start at Fountain Square and I'm going to ice skate and then I'm going to.
So I would honestly, I would probably like start somewhere at Findlay Market. Shop there, see all of the different vendors. I would jump on the streetcar and then just work my way down to all of the different. So stop at Washington Park for the winter market. Then I would go to Fountain Square to ice skate. And then I'd go to the Banks for now that the Chris Kindle Market. But then all of the restaurants in between. And then over the Rhine, there's so many awesome local shops on Vine and Main. And there's, you know, I mean, I just feel like the streetcar is a great little hub to create your agenda and start each little section. And you could have a whole day out of it.
He doesn't even know this is going to be like a work day for me.
That's great.
I'm like, here, I'll try it.
And if you go to downtowncincinnati.com, we are going to have different itineraries and different ideas. And we're trying to get with all the businesses downtown to put all of their holiday happenings. So it's kind of a one-stop shop. But on our social media, we're also doing the 12 days of giveaway. And so you can enter and they'll have different packages of downtown restaurants and shops with gift cards and things.
And at any given moment, there might be live entertainment on Fountain Square.
Oh, yeah.
That's the fun part.
I know.
You know, I don't know how most people, like, find out about it. But usually, I just stumble across it. And then we hang out there and listen to music for a while. And it's just such a nice kind of, like, welcoming surprise. I'm proud of our city when I see just people, like, stopping and listening to music. And it's probably the most diverse crowd you will see, too.
I will tell you, well, specifically New Year's Eve is the, like, it's the melting pot of the city, right? I mean, you've got people who are at Morton's, and this year it'll be Royce and Ruby's, and, you know, they're all dining and they're dressed up, and then you've got families on Fountain Square, and then you've got people that are going on the buses to Government Square. But at midnight, everyone comes out, sees the fireworks, they celebrate the new year, and it's the most diverse thing you'll see, and it's so fun. It's pretty awesome. But to your point about just hanging out at Fountain Square, when we opened the Fountain Bar in August, you know, we've always had pop-up tents and served beer 7 days a week, but it never felt like a place. Mm-hmm. And so when we did the Container Bar and rebranded it, it's really become this bar.
It's very cute. And for the Blink Parade, people are like, where should I watch it? I'm like, where the Container Bar is.
Yeah.
It's going to go right by.
Yeah.
The Container Bar is the thing.
Well, and it's fun. It's fun to see how many people are just like, you know, either if you're staying at the hotel and it's Tuesday at noon and you want to just have a beverage, you could have a soda too.
Or at lunch.
You just sit and, yeah. You just people watch, and it's become really like a place to gather and meet people. And we have heaters out now, so you can go have a beverage if you don't want to ice skate. I'm not an ice skater.
There's bumper cars, though.
And the bumper cars.
There's bumper cars for people who don't ice skate, like myself.
Yeah. I've worked here for 14 years, and I think I've ice skated 3 times.
It's hard. I'm a roller skater.
Did you roller skate this year? Frisch's Roller Rink, Court Street.
I did not. I have a little bit of an injury this year, but next year, I love that we have it. It's so cute. And I've been like to it.
Got it.
And been very sad about not
being able to participate.
No, and I really should have, you know, gotten all the things checked out at that point instead of the point where I can't walk anymore. But next year, we're going to get all better for that. But I was like, huh, I can't really I can't roller skate, but here we are. Oh, I can't do bumper cars though with my. That's fun.
You can't.
It is for everybody.
It is. However, I have to say, you can ice skate when it's swampy, but we can't have the bumper cars out when it's swampy because they're electric.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and one other thing
but
to
the
say.
Things you know for your job.
I know. Oh, I know. Well, and glycol lines, you know, the chiller at the ice rink, how hard it has to work. Who knows those things? But it's been fun to learn all of the ins and outs. But I will say, we are open now for the ice rink. And because it's before the holiday season, we do a lot of deals. So if you go to myfountainsquare.com, you know, on Monday, it's Meal Deal Monday. So you can ice skate and get a free piece of pizza. And on Tuesdays, we have college night. And Sunday night, we have 21 and up night. A lot of different things going on.
Not those last two. But I do, like, I love that you're saying this. I encourage everyone to go look at this website because when people are like, they see, I talk about all these fun things I do on the podcast. I don't do that by accident. I look at the things. So I know where to look, right?
Yeah.
I interview people and I take the time to go and say, okay, here's a list of the things. What do I want to do? Mark them down and kind of like, you have to plan the fun. Yes, you can just happen by and it is fun, but to do all the things, you do have to map it out and like plan and say, okay, I'm going to do these things.
It's funny. I have a 16-month-old, and last year, you know, she's just a blob, so I didn't do much things. But now she's like fun and wants to do holiday things, and I'm like, oh, I got to map this out. Like,
yes,
I got to actually be, you know, more thoughtful of what light shows am I going to see and like try to really figure this out so I can map it out.
We always did Downtown Dazzle. And so Macy's would stay open just the one night, and we would see Santa at Macy's at the late night and then go and see the repelling Santa and the tree and everything. That's
so I will
memories.
Say, we do, so Washington Park will have Santa's workshop on Saturday and Sunday during the day. And so you can get a picture with Santa there. However, we, you know, so Dazzle used to have Santa at Macy's, and then we used to do a Santa at Crew. But with all the transition, there is no Santa downtown. And so we will be working on that. But I will say that there's a Santa shortage. So if anyone's out there and is a Santa,
I saw this somewhere else. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because of COVID.
Put that on our to-do list, Sherry, for stories. Okay. The great Santa shortage of 2022.
Do you know there's a turkey shortage, too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There
is. That was a national story yesterday.
Yeah. Oh. I wonder if the Santa shortage is because everybody shaved their COVID beards and decided to lose their COVID-15, and so there's just fewer people that kind of fit the role.
That's a valid point.
I think Santas might be worried about COVID.
But yeah. You will have a Santa.
So Washington Park is booked out with Santas.
That's good.
I mean, I know it's the same jolly old man everywhere, but,
oh, right.
You know.
I don't think we have that many children listeners.
Great.
Mine, that's it. He's 14. He knows now.
By the
that
way,
was an ugly conversation.
Santa transcends space and time.
True.
You can, yeah.
We have a whole closet upstairs in our office. It's like we've got 10 Santa suits. And so, and we have a staff that's very young. They have a lot of young kids. And we're like, hide the Santa suits. And they go.
Oh, my. Oh, that's so cute. Burl could be a Santa.
What?
No. All right. He's kind of busy, actually.
No way.
Running the Inquirer is a very big job.
I think it'd be more fun to be a Santa.
Steve could be a Santa. Tell him I said that.
I will.
He could
Nobody
just fill
wants
in.
A Steve Leeper Santa. Come on now.
We're not the mayor.
I love, Steve,
kids.
But
what if the mayor could be
that?
A Santa?
Can you yeah? see Steve being Santa? How,
no.
how, how?
Yeah, no.
I can't see him getting, you
oh,
know.
He likes kids. He's got a soft side for kids.
But the mayor's so popular, he could never be Santa because people be like, you're the mayor.
I know.
Even the little kids.
Well, and that's another – for the Perlink light-up ceremony, we always try to figure out how Santa comes in and how he's revealed. And so that's
always
like
tell
like
us
our,
a secret?
Maybe. No.
I mean, we love when guests break news. So helicopter.
Ooh.
Drone, just kind of parachute them out.
Yeah.
Of the
hang gliding.
You'll have to come
like
to the
that.
Event to find out.
I'm coming.
Great.
I have guests in town. We're going to do this. A lot of times I've had to go out of town, but I'm going to be here and I'm doing
awesome.
This.
Awesome.
It'll be just like when Jack was little, except he'll be complaining and he's 14 and feel like Santa's not real.
Yeah, at that age, nothing's impressive
He's doing
anymore.
It though because I'm in charge, so.
I love it. I love it.
All right. I think the one takeaway though is that I cannot fit one more Christmas thing in our attic. Not one more thing. So it's hard because I like to buy the Christmas
So when do
things.
You get the things out of your attic?
After Thanksgiving.
Okay.
But the day
You're
after.
Traditionalist.
The day after. Yeah.
Have you seen that meme where it's like a guy that's Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas, and
yeah,
Thanksgiving's just a nobody.
That's like, not my favorite holiday, but
yeah,
I still like it to look like Thanksgiving if I'm hosting it.
Yeah.
I am.
That's fair.
But I love Christmas.
I know people that go right from Halloween to Christmas. Like they start putting Christmas out just because probably like you, they have so much stuff. They can't wait till
I know. One of my friends moved out of town and gave me beautiful Christmas, like the whole like ceramic Christmas village, which I didn't have. And he's like, I know you'll take care of it and you'll love it. And I was like,
I was actually thinking of putting the lights out this weekend.
Or today.
Today, the last warm day, and not plugging
them in.
It's
going to rain tomorrow
today. Yeah.
That's a smart
That's a good idea. I'll text Alex after this.
All right. Well, if you're not going to break news and tell us how Santa is going to arrive, what can you leave us with like... One thing we didn't know about this tree.
One thing you didn't know about
or...
this tree. That it has 7,000 linear feet.
No,
of
I
lights.
Need more than that. Like, what can you tell us?
Put some hot gossip on the tree.
Like, it's big.
Where
like,
did
how does...
you get it? Like, what?
From Medina, Ohio.
Okay.
All
right. So, all right. And it comes saucy. In a truck, right?
Comes in a truck. It travels. Yeah. They, like, you know. Takes
and you
all
said
there,
it takes like four or five different groups to actually
nine groups between
nine
the
groups.
Crane company, the you know construction company, the you know
and you
got to
time it right. I mean, you can't have the crane.
Oh, yeah.
You can't have the like light people there if the crane guy didn't show
right.
up. And
well, the light people come actually on Monday and they start. All, so they're there doing
okay.
the lights now.
Do you ride with it?
I should right if I'm Mrs. Claus. No, I do not.
Okay.
All right.
All right. One more question.
Yeah.
Favorite part of your job?
Oh, You know, I have to say, it's just working with all of the different people downtown and in the city of just connecting the dots. I think that's my most favorite. And then seeing it all come to life.
That's what we need. That actually needs to be a job, just the coordinating of all the things together.
Yeah.
But now it's your job, too.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for joining us
Thanks
today,
for having
Christy.
Me.
I really appreciate it. I loved hearing about the tree. Some weeks are, we thought
it
is the season.
It's after election. It was like we could have been like serious about the election. But like when he said Christmas, I said yes. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. I'm so excited to like impart all my knowledge about the Christmas tree and sound so smart. Like when I'm downtown and seeing it and everything I do, even I can't have a 45-foot tree with 7,000 linear
square feet of lights.
But anyone who's looking for a live tree, I cannot say enough about the Caracole Christmas tree sale. You know, it supports like the AIDS funding in Cincinnati. I don't know where they get their trees. They are amazing. They last a long time. The people are so nice.
So they're fresh. They're not like dropping needles as soon as you
exactly.
get home.
I've gotten my tree. They were at Fountain Square for a long time, not at Findlay Market for a long time, where I kind of found them and they've moved around a little bit, but look for them online. I always get my live tree there.
Do they have typically tall, skinny trees?
Yes, they do.
Because that's what I'm looking for.
Oh, yeah, because you have the loft space.
Yeah, we have the kind of vaulted ceiling in our living room right in front of the windows, but I don't want a big fat tree because, you know, I host the Enquirer holiday party, so
that's,
I need the floor
true.
Space so I can go high.
See, Christmas planning.
I can go up all
that's
day
right.
long, but I don't want to go wide because I need the floor space.
It's like Christy, it's like it's just on steroids. Like the problem, we all have all the same problems with our trees. It's just hers is just on a bigger scale.
All right, so this is the time of the show when we talk about the Cincinnati moment of the week. And I have to say, I'm not just kind of like, you know, trying to inflate your ego or anything, but I would say that you created on your own, just by having a birthday, a Cincinnati moment this weekend. Because, I mean, I've been to some fun birthday parties that, you know, bring out the guests, but, you know, and I don't want to say, you know, tell everybody what birthday it was.
That was 50.
All right, you said it.
Wait, I just said my foot is like killing me and I have like a leg, like a little limp. I'm 50.
But of course, we can talk about, you know, the who's who of guests that shows up at a Sherry Coolidge party. But let's talk about the space for a minute, because you didn't have it at your house. You decided to have people show up at the Gibson House.
I was not aware of the space until I really started researching spaces. And by the way, guys, if you need a space, I know everything about every space in Cincinnati. But the Gibson House is just the Gibson greeting card company. The
yes.
family used to live there.
Pause for a minute. For those who don't know, the Gibson greeting card company, which is probably like, you know, number two, but we try harder to Hallmark, was based and founded here. And the owner built a home in, I guess that's Avondale, right? Is that
yes,
where we were?
Yes, and it's beautiful across from the hospitals.
Yeah.
And it has botanical gardens. My party was a little later than that, but like when I arrived, you could see it is just the lovely grounds and it's still a lovely home. I wish it's all bedrooms. Upstairs are kind of offices now, but the fireplaces and the big old kitchen and the windows and the grand entrance door. I can't believe somebody used to live there. Like I wanted to stay.
It's a really cool mansion. And there in that part of town, you can drive around and just, you know, maybe we should put together a virtual mansion tour. Like here's who built it, you know, kind of who's who.
I would be happy to do it because it was so great.
Kind of from the industrial era, Cincinnati's sort of like, you know, heyday as a you know, a place where goods were made, not just, you know, people think of Procter & Gamble and all of that, but just a lot of different companies here. In fact, we do typically, time to time, do mansion features or, you know, put a photo gallery together of an interesting property. But that was just a really cool spot. And guest after guest were like, who knew that you could actually rent the space and have an event here?
That was like reporter research. Like, where could I have it? And like, I did all of my research. So I put all my reporter skills to work. And like, what, like, I knew the parks had events, and the parks really, they have a lot of amazing spaces. A lot of them were already rented by the time I got to the idea that I needed to do this. And they really keep them up, and they're run by Premier Parks, is just a company. And a woman like keeps track of everything, Judy, and she loves the properties. You could see it in her heart about, you know, how she takes care of it. She keeps some of her own things as the decorations there. And it was just this grand space, and the care and love that's still there make it very special.
It was special. So that was my Cincinnati moment of the week, you know, rolling into a party at a mansion, not just any mansion, but the Gibson House. Such history there. It was a great idea, Sherry.
I do want to encourage, when you're thinking about party planning, I did this by accident, but this is kind of besides that you had the party at this lovely place. But part of the aftermath of what I heard is, thank you for introducing me to so-and-so, and who wanted to connect with who, and who was able to have conversations with people that they don't normally get to talk to. And so I'm glad I had a large party because it allowed for that. But I think that this is a good time, like really kind of post-COVID, if we're going to say that, of having people together. And people definitely wanted to go out, but not the normal group that you always have the same people. Like, venture out and just, it was a salon type of thing. And I just, that's the part I heard the most about. And I'm very glad that I did that and was able to provide a good conversation.
And I agree.
And then I had election night.
And then we had to go right into election
night.
Wonder
why I overslept. I don't know.
Well, you deserve to get a few extra hours of sleep. As most hardworking journalists do, it was a big night for us. It's fun to cover elections. It's one of my, you know, favorite things to do, because it brings us, like you were talking about your party, it brings all of us together, because we have the core group that covers politics and government. But covering election, you know, we bring everybody together.
The bourbon toast.
We
get just some people.
Well, yes, we did a toast because our lease is up at 312 Elm, and I don't know where we're going to end up. Probably somewhere else in this building. Who knows? Actually, kind of know. But either way, it won't be on the 19th floor.
I have a lot of memories of this
right?
floor.
So we had a little toast for that.
Good,
so
I've bad.
One, so I have one like, quick funny also that's okay. A So Cincinnati moment to share with you. And I hope I don't embarrass her. But as we are collecting stuff, we're giving a lot of historical photos to the library, for example, some of our archive files and all of that, which means, you know, that's they're going to be digitized. They'll be available for anyone to go look at. But we came across some items that I thought would be of interest to the Keating family. So, you know, long story short, William J. Keating, former congressman, also was the publisher of the Enquirer, not once but twice. He took a little break because he went and was in charge of the news division for all of our company at the time, Old Gannett. You know, we're New Gannett now. But anyway, Bill Keating found a brass plate with his name on it and found a USA Today first edition signed from Al Newharth, the founder of USA Today, the first publisher of USA Today, and the former CEO of the Gannett Company, the late Al Newharth, had signed a first edition page to Bill Keating, and it was framed. It was just kind of in a closet somewhere. So I called his granddaughter, who you know, because you cover her.
Councilwoman Liz Keating.
Liz Keating. And I said, do you want this stuff? And she's like, oh, boy, that would be great. So she came over, and she asked me, and I hadn't thought about this for a while. She said to me, she goes, I remember being a little girl running around my grandfather's office, the publisher's office. Is there still the button that closes the doors? And I was like, yes.
I don't know this.
Oh, yes. So it was a tradition for publishers of the Enquirer. And this, I'm talking like back in the, you know, mahogany office.
And it was,
desk,
too.
Yeah. You know, lavishly appointed publisher's office. The publishers of the Cincinnati Enquirer had a button installed so that if they called in someone to meet with them and they were, you know, sitting at the desk in front of the publisher and they needed to have a private conversation, you didn't have to get up and shut the door. You didn't have to yell for, you know,
yeah.
your administrative assistant, which was a secretary back then. We don't say that anymore. But there was a button and the doors were magnetized and you hit the button and the door shut. And I said, Liz, I'm pretty sure that button is still there. So we went up to the old publisher's office. You know, we're not on the 20th floor anymore. We're contained on the 19th floor, but that floor is still up there for now. And we opened the doors and Liz went and pressed the button that she did. She used to play with that button and shut the doors when she was a little girl. And she asked me to take a picture of her pressing the button that she sent around, you know, and all of that. So it was another Cincinnati moment to reflect on just a giant in our industry from Cincinnati, a former congressman, you know, William J.
Keating. Her family history is very important to her. She talked about it yesterday at council at the end when she was wishing Greg good luck and some of the other things she had found from her grandfather, just about working across the aisle. And she must be having like a really
It was fun to give her that memorabilia and fun to see her kind of reliving her childhood, hitting that button and the doors just like shutting in dramatic fashion. Can you just imagine?
Yes, I can.
Like, Mr. Keating, I need to talk to you about the Shillitoe's account. Click. Boom. So anyway, we better wrap it up, Sherry.
I know. We really have talked a long time
Producer
today.
Phil is kind of like tapping his watch. Thank you, Phil. Thank you for keeping us on track, but you tried valiantly. And
we never look over there.
We never look over there.
All right, you guys, thanks for listening. And just look for a podcast every week. And we're going to take Christmas off.
All right.
All right. Bye, guys.